Blog Talk Radio.
We'd like to welcome everyone to Missing Pages of History, a show that is dedicated to enlighten, to educate, to stimulate, and to help develop underserved communities. We want to encourage our communities to come and join us on a biweekly basis as we begin to travel the course of filling in our missing pages of history. Today, we're going to be dealing with hot topics and things you should know. With us right now as a contributor and Mississippi History Analyst, we have with us Emmanuel out of North Carolina. We'd like to welcome him, and we would like to know, Emmanuel, what's going on in the mix of your woods, and can you share us also with us some things that you think people need to know? Welcome, Emmanuel.
Welcome, sir. Welcome. Yeah, a couple of things we should be reversed about is the war, and of course Iraq is over. But again, they got insurgents there. You got terrorists there who are doing things. ISIS group, and they're very small military, very small. Got a little money, $450 million. They have that, but and they of course they're recruiting people from all over the world. They're on the way to Baghdad, per se. That's where they'll be destroyed, as in Baghdad. They try to go up in there. President's doing a good job. Make sure you think this thing out. We're not going to put boots on the ground anymore, which I think is fantastic. Send in 300 of the advisors. We got 250 soldiers already to protect the embassy, basically. That's what they're there for. And it's advisors to basically put some, to help out the Iraq soldiers there, make sure that they fight. And they quite a few military armaments in there. We sent some quite a few armaments in there to help them out to make sure and train them and retrain them basically. But the Iraq trying to end this thing, and of course you got terrorist groups who are getting funded basically by taking things, by taking cities. They took three major cities in Iraq, and of course they robbed the banks, took the money out of the banks and everywhere else to pay these, I call them missionaries. But that's what's going on basically international scene, is that at my, you might say, in my part of the country where I live, the local news is that a lot of things are happening here. it's amazing how things are happening here. We got fracking going on. People know what fracking is, basically. It's basically opening up, areas near the ocean and for natural gas to expand that. So that's a huge thing that's going on here in the neck of my woods. And also our education here budget finally got approved. And what we're going to do is raise the property tax. And also we're going to add you might say taxes to the ABC stores, the alcoholic beverage stores. So to do that, a lot of people might stop drinking. If they add it to the beer, they'll get more money. I think just add it to the alcohol, because ABC stores don't sell beer. They only sell basically wines and liquor, mainly liquor. So I don't really get enough money from it, but they raise tax on the beer, I think it'd be much better. And tax on sporting events at the different, when they have these sporting events, so they raise taxes on that. That might help us out. But still, the administration cost is what's getting everybody. That's who's getting paid. Teachers aren't getting paid. The administrators are getting paid. Most of them get paid over six figures to sit in office all day. And that's our problem. The administrators takes the money from the lottery. The administration takes about 70% of the lottery money goes to administrators. Not to, to winnings that much of this or that, or to the school budget. Only 7% of the 100% is taken in from the lottery go to the education budget. That's 7%. Everything is administration costs, machines, you know, printing the lottery tickets. And of course, when someone wins, the person sold that ticket about the business, they get 10% of that also. So that's what they got to take a look at. They only put on the ABC stores, which I think is fantastic. They lowered the age of minors here to 18, I think, to buy alcoholic 18 to buy alcoholic beverages. So that's they lowered that to get more money, I guess, and or create more alcoholics, whatever it's going to do. But that's the big thing here. Hey, one news capsule, the police woman they caught here, she had marijuana. What they're going to do with her, but that's a hot topic now. They're finding that out, that what's going on. And they're finding out now that some of the people are feeding their dogs marijuana for some of the ailments they got. So now we got another problem. Dogs get sick like everybody else. So they're trying to treat that with marijuana also. So now that's going to be a problem. So those are the kind of things that happen in my neck of the woods.
You know, interesting about this marijuana incident that you were speaking to about feeding dogs marijuana, because recently in the back of Nick's Atwood in the state of Virginia, they are now talking about openly putting marijuana in foods. Matter of fact, they're about putting marijuana with hot dogs. So it seems like marijuana is going to be a new product that can be used now.
Yeah, it's going to be in right now. It's being infused in things like cookies, brownies, and some of your butters. And two states have legalized marijuana for dogs to veterinarians. I think Colorado is one of them, you know that, and Washington State. So your dog can get marijuana for extreme ailments. So that's crazy. But that's amazing. But like I say, right away, you'll see when dogs do marijuana, same thing humans do, you're going to see, you'll see them barking with a mumble, you might say, and they can have glassy eyes, and of course that includes vomiting. So this is something they found when you give those are side effects when you give marijuana to dogs, and they're doing this in two states right now. Got legalized to give marijuana to dogs. Veterinarians, I guess they okayed it and got it through the legislation. So Colorado State. State of Washington, and don't confuse Washington, D.C., but the state of Washington, and Colorado has legalized it for veterinarians using those two states. That's amazing.
Emmanuel, I wonder if the Food and Drug Administration has really truly researched and tested the impact of marijuana in foods and what it does to people. Or is it something
they've done that fair track?
Well,
they can't do much about that because, again, you got state legislation. They're the one passing this thing. So the federal, that's where the thin line comes. That's why the states want to take over opposed to the federal government telling them, being the auditor, the chief auditor. And this is what's going on with a lot of states. 29 states have legalized, I think, marijuana. And all these and the states have done it. See, the federal government is still against it. But federal government can't get no money from the state when they do that. The money goes straight to the state, the taxes, the fees, whatever. None of that money goes to the federal government. So it's amazing what is going on with the state. They want the states to take over, basically. Oh, I got one more thing happened big time. North Carolina, I think South Carolina, Mississippi, they passed laws in the state now that you got to have a picture ID to vote. So their Voting Rights Act is really getting out there. They're destroying it to a certain extent. They're trying to, the states are. So once all legislation is now for the voting rights, you can't believe what's going on. They're trying to stop, basically minorities from voting. They're putting out strict laws basically for Hispanic voters, other immigrant voters, and also African American voters. They got strict laws are coming up big time. Besides the gerrymandering, they got this going on too. Closing polls on Sunday. That's when 50% of us vote based on weekend because we work. We're working two jobs trying to make the money we need to make. So they know that European Americans can get through the polls. If they got a good job, they get paid, don't have to work two jobs. Don't have to do a whole lot. I got people working for them. We're not in that particular. So they know where we are. They study us all the time. So they know exactly what goes on. When do we come? They have people there taking videos and everything else and doing recordings and make sure they're there, the spotlight, things that are heavily trafficked. We heavily trafficked on Sunday for voting. We just do that. We got to change our strategy. So one of the first TV shows I'm going to do is voting rights and changing our strategy. One of the first shows I'm getting together now to make sure that happens a certain way. So we got to get to the churches, to the masses, where our people go most of the time. And we got to talk voting starting August, September, October, November this time. And we got to get the people in the community, make sure school boards, we got to make sure we get the right judges and everything else. So we got to make sure we pay perfect attention to that. And I'm going to school them on some things they got to be taught, some critical thinking they got to be taught when they go to the voting booth. Right? Like I said before, they are not putting R and D's on these things. Republicans, Democrats, they're not doing this. So they don't know who you vote for. How about I do? They're going to tell you anything. They're going to have people that are telling you, oh, he's Democrat. He's Republican. He's just that. I don't know what he is. And now you confuse, you're holding everybody up. So the main thing we got to try to do is put some strategy in place to make sure that we stall the lines, make sure they wait in line. So we got to make sure we got to do whatever they're doing, we got to counteract that. So we got to counteract what they're doing and make sure we do. I'm taking notes and making sure that I get to the pastors, all the big churches here in North Carolina, to make sure that we strategize at the same time. We need the Republicans out of office. They have stopped everything. You know, we're talking about how one Republican said he had Mr. Tillis running for senator. He said, for African Americans, he said, divide them and you can conquer them. That's what he said. He was on TV. And now he's trying to clean it up. So we got some pastors here trying to meet him at the state office and say, what did you mean by divide and conquer? He's trying to, like again, he's trying to patch it up some kind of way. He didn't mean what he said he meant. But everybody know what he meant. He said, divide them, who are the them, and conquer them. Well, who are the them? Nobody's asked the question, what are you talking about? Who is the them? Critical thinking. So I talked to Dr. Paul Anderson, and he said, Mr. John, nobody answered that question yet? I said, no, we don't ask critical questions. Why did he say it, first of all? What are the reason for saying it? You mean to divide and conquer Europeans? Is that what you're talking about? So, like I said, we got to ask them questions that we don't ask. Because they have to, everything sort of frames on us. And we don't have to, we're afraid to ask the right questions and get the right answers. You got to tell them, I'm not buying that answer. I'm not buying that lie you're telling. We're afraid to say that. And they say it all the time.
To our listening audience, you are listening to Missing Pages of History, and our contributor and analyst, Emmanuel of North Carolina, has been giving us an update on what's going on in the neck of his woods and things we need to know. We now transcend to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, where we have Mikhail. Mikhail is also a contributor and an analyst for Missing Pages of History, and he's going to give us an update on things we need to know and what's going on in the neck of their woods. Mikhail, tell us what's going on in the neck of your woods.
Peace. This is Mikhail, Philadelphia, and we've got great weather here today. It might do a little rain, but other than that, it's been fine, really nice. We've been covering a lot of nice events here in the local area. Last week was the Islamic Festival held at Penn's Landing. It was a well-attended event. It's been 22 years now that it's been in operation. There's been food vending, speakers, performances by the youth. We did some videotaping, and we'll be posting that very soon for Missing Pages and Philadelphia Roundtable. We also have quite a bit of inactivity for the youth at this point. They've just gotten out of school for the summer, and we'll be looking around to see what we can find for youth activities. To piggyback on what Mr. Joyner was saying concerning divide and conquer, we can look throughout history and see that that's been a general procedure from the time of colonialization in Africa and North Africa, and currently in the Iraq situation that we have now, which is to a certain degree based on religious differences within the Islamic religion. The group called ISIS is a Sunni Orthodox group. Its goal is to develop a kind of a national essence out of the two states, Syria and Iraq, and they've accomplished quite a bit of that in that they have taken over a large portion of the area. Their complaint is that with the Maliki government, who's a Shiite government, they are neglecting, in their opinion, the needs of the Sunni minority. And because of this, there's been quite a bit of fighting. The ISIS group, as they've been called, has implemented Islamic law in the areas where they've taken over and are now pushing towards Baghdad. The idea of an Islamic caliphate has been bandied about for the last 20, 30 years or more. The last time that occurred was under the Turkish Ottoman rule, and this is prior to World War One. You look back at World War One, and they speak about the Archduke being assassinated. That's one aspect of the reason for the war, but a big portion of that, and we've seen this borne out by the military aspect of what occurred immediately after that assassination in the participation of Britain, France, and Russia in that area, in the area of Syria and Iraq. At the time, prior to this assassination, development of a large railway was being instituted and was going to be taken from Constantinople to Baghdad, and at the time, this is the beginning of the industrial age, diesel fuel, oil, is becoming the new material for industry, and Standard Oil, British, Exxon, and these other European powers did not want to see this take place. So that's the backdrop for what we have today. Resources are the key for the outside powers, and the management of those resources is the key for the people who live in those areas. We see the same problem in Nigeria and with the problems that they're having there also in terms of Islamic extremists. This does not benefit the people there. The people there are being slaughtered by both sides, and the implementation of advanced warfare, such as drones, is going to be the outcome of this conflict because of the divisions that are easily exploited. And that's the my take on the Iraq situation currently.
We also have a contributor analyst in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We'd like to bring in this point in time is June. June, welcome to Missing Pages of History.
Well, good afternoon, viewers. Or listeners, I'm going to get away from the international scene and talk about what specifically is happening here in Philadelphia. Here in Philadelphia, but also around the country, because we know that our public school system has been under attack. Our students are not learning. They're not being given resources like books or anything to learn what is necessary for them to compete in, in our world economy that we have. For example, our budget here, the school budget, has been over 300,000, excuse me, not 300,000, but millions of dollars over budget for the last couple of years. And the school reform commission has been looking for alternative ways to try to fund the budget, the school budget here. So what they did was approach Temple University, which is one of our major universities in this area. And the schools were closing down about 23 to 30 schools in the last 5 years. And one of those schools was called William Penn High School. They used to house a lot of the students who lived in the North Philadelphia and surrounding areas. That school was closed down in 2009. Temple University decided that they would step in and buy the building. They paid $15 million for that particular building, and the School Reform Commission, you know, authorized this. Now, according to Temple's president, they see it as a good thing. In North Central Philadelphia, where a lot of our black youth used to attend the school, they claim that they're going to open a portion of that building back to the community where they can put in maybe some trades like construction trades where the students that used to go there can now go there and learn, you know, get that kind of training. So on the local scene, pretty much I think that's a major thing that's happening here.
What's the present status of the school situation in terms of the high school, elementary school, the closing? What it look like for the upcoming fall?
As far as I know, like I said, they're still having budgeting problems. Our council has just closed for the summer. They're not going to reconvene until September, but they're still looking. The superintendent Height is still looking for ways to get money to pay the teachers, so that the schools that we have will be able to open in September. So it's still a problem. $15 million, that's just not enough.
Mm. Let's make our transition down to Virginia, where we have another contributor, analyst, Susie, who will give us an update on what's going on in the neck of your woods. But before she speaks, we'd like to let our listening audience know that you are listening to Missing Pages on History. We'd like to have your feedback. We'd like to know what's going on in the neck of your woods, things that we need to know. We give you this opportunity. We'd like for you to call in at 818-337-0016. That's 818-337-0016 and hit number one. Once you hit number one, your number will show up on our board and we'll recognize you by your last four number. We'd like for you to come in to participate and fill in these missing pages as it relates to the realities of our people. Right now, we welcome Susan. Susan, welcome. What's going on in Nick of your woods?
Yes, what's happening in the neck of our woods is the fact that as far as the immigration regarding all the young kids that came over here, they're trying to situate some of them in one of the black universities that closed down a year ago, St. Paul's University, and as a result of them trying to bring a large amount of these young kids here, people in that area, which is a predominantly black area, they had a meeting in which hundreds of them showed up stating that they didn't want the kids here for various reasons. So as a result of all the people coming together within that community, they were able to get them to say that they would take St. Paul's University out of consideration for these immigrant children.
And Susan, I believe I've been following the case a little bit, and I believe that based upon one of the major backlash from the case or the issue is that there seemed to be a stepping over boundaries as relates to who should make decisions for local and regional areas. And in terms of there was an outcry from the local community that they knew nothing about this plan and they had no say-so. And I think there was a lot of resentment came out as was more so through that than anything else. What would be your take on that assessment?
Yeah, there was an issue with that, baby, because the community just recently found out, as of having the meeting on Friday, they just recently found out that actually the legislatures here had actually signed a contract. And so as far as they were concerned, issues like that they thought should have been brought to them, and this was one reason why they were able to stop them from considering St. Paul because of the fact the individuals, legislators that signed the contract gave no one knowledge that they were actually signing this contract to bring these kids here. So that was one major factor in them able to say, no, can't use St. Paul's at this time period.
Again, to our listening audience, feel free to call in at 818-337-0016. hit one if you have any views or comments you'd like to make. We're basically talking about what's going on in Nicaragua Woods and things people need to know. We want to fill in our missing pages. We raised this question with Emmanuel. Emmanuel, we know that there's a large issue concerning public education all throughout this country. We know that even a particular issue when we're talking about higher learning. I know recently also down in your state, they were looking at closing several black universities down there. Can you give our people an update and some of the dynamics behind this whole question, how they're dealing with the closing of black colleges and what's the implication of or the impact they may have on our communities?
Yeah, what's going on, particularly black universities? Most of our black universities are supported by taxes, which is that's the first place they pull from, taxes for education. That's usually the largest budget that we have in most states is the education, because a lot of institutions, quite a few. North Carolina, I believe, has the most black universities in one state. Quite a few of them are here. I think most of them are here. We only got basically four states that have a large, you might say, contingency of black universities. And what's going on here is that some of the classes, and what I'm looking at when they're talking about, they're basically electives. So some of the electives are disappearing. And I'm not saying the electives are the courses that they take away, because most people who are in elective courses, I would say the ones that are very low electives are in the black universities, and they have a very small student base. And, of course, when you kill that class, you also take the professors out, the assistant professors out, you take all of them out. What they want in the states is to forget about the black universities. They probably keep 10 or 20 around. I think it's 136 altogether. My nephew graduated from St. Paul, by the way. He played football there. And what they're cutting out, things like the bands. They just laid off the band director, his whole staff of 14. And some of the classes they got rid of were some of the physical ed type classes, you might say, that pertain to physical. So get rid of those. Now they're keeping the core classes, those professors, because they're on a strain for salary. The average, you might say, European professor makes $120,000 a year, where the average African-American professor makes half as much, about 65 to 75. Even though they got PhDs, same thing that everybody else got, but just don't, you know. Just, again, tax-based, supported, basically. Alumni bring a lot of money in to basically put down the European universities where ours don't. You got five universities bringing money from, you know, from alumni. That's at Howard University. That's Morehouse College, Florida A&M, Hampton Institute in Virginia. Those are major four, and Spelman College, which is all, you know, female school in Georgia. They bring the most money from their alumni because they get very good jobs, and they send money back. So that's a big thing. We don't have the classes that we need, you might say, to get, I call them prestigious masters, opposed to just getting a master's or PhDs. And this is where the money is being paid. But again, there is no price on a PhD at a black university. At white university, there's a ceiling and there's a beginning. And their beginning is higher than what the end is for a full professor at a black university.
Let me get you to hold your thoughts for one second. If you let our listening audience, for those that listen to us on the line, you can join us at 818-337-0016. If you do not get to hear the full entirety of this program, please go to our archive by dialing www.blogtalkradio.com/missing-pages-of-history-inc. We thank you. Go ahead, continue, man.
Yeah, like one university here, they 36 programs got taken out, dismissed, along with the professors. Well, now you're talking about probably with assistant professor, whatever, and that department, you probably lost 100 people. Where the budget at this school is very tight. Education, again, where it's higher, where it's, I call it mid, which is high school, basically. And, of course, teachers and professors want better pay. And the cost of living, of course, is gone, so it's just made on merit. It's just basically merit raises. So they're rewriting the merit raises, how you get one. So that's just a plain major. And also, I don't know about the tenure yet, what that comes to be. See, but the thing is this with education. We got to understand this. Education is very expensive. What happens is that when a teacher retire, principal retire, administration people retire, they have to get retirement. Then you got to hire the teacher to take their place. And now you're paying out two salaries, basically, the pension, whatever, retirement, and you're paying the teacher or the, you know, whatever. So you got all this happening with the same money. Can't happen. You got to need more taxes and so many loopholes for certain people. They get so all this and the structural part of education. Not so much this, but it's the school, upkeep of the school, the maintaining of the school, from the landscaping all the way to everything. You got, you know, we got school buses, especially in the high school level, and integration. So all this stuff coming into play. Everybody getting retirement money. Everybody got to be replaced, and you're sending out two checks. So you can't keep, and nobody explaining this, you can't keep the same money we get every year. That's why the budget don't fit. Explain it. You have to explain what's going on. You're paying two people. You're paying two police officers. You're paying two firemen. The one's retired and the one's getting hired, or the one's working there, with overtime and everything else coming to play, and benefits. So all this has to happen. You can't keep the collect the same amount of money. It's impossible. People retiring, they want raises. You got to get raises almost every year. People coming for an increase. All this stuff happens. People go on to get further educated, get masters and get, you know, PhDs. Now, and sometimes some of the administration pays for this. More money. Money has to come from somewhere. So you try to tax, you might say, sin items. So you tax the marijuana, you tax the liquor, you tax the beer, you have sports tax. Sports is not much of a sin, but you try to sin tax. Some states make it and don't have a problem with education. And they don't have an estate tax, like the Texas, the Delaware, the Florida. They don't have these huge problems. They don't have these kind of problems. They don't even have state tax. But they're not paying people a whole lot of money in these agencies. Our top guy here is a lottery. He's a lottery chairman, whatever he is. Over $300,000 a year. That's some numbers for lottery? That job ain't worth that kind of money. And the guy up under him make almost as much as he do, and the guy up under him make almost as much as he do. And most of these people are 85% Europeans. They're going to make sure that they get their pockets filled. They make sure they're going to live in nice houses, nice have businesses, have this and that, because they're simply getting paid. So this is the same thing transforms all over. And the state going to make sure this happens. They're going to make sure that the Europeans basically get paid. It's just the way it is. We have to understand that. It's one-sided. Always been one-sided. We have to understand that. Our teachers here get paid $32,000 to $37,000 beginning teachers. All the other states besides Mississippi, Arkansas, everybody starts up in the $40,000-some range. Some states 50 and 60, like Connecticut. They don't have no problem with my school budget. None. Because, first of all, they pay for the minimum wage. Anytime you have a minimum wage state, you're going to have these kind of problems. You're going to have job problems because, again, people trying to work two jobs, some men is three jobs, trying to catch up, trying to make the money to pay the rent. And that's where they want to keep you at. So you can commit a crime, basically, and put you in jail, put you on the state. So you look at that, You look at the hierarchy of the prison system, 85% are Europeans. They are wardens, assistant wardens. They're the top guys making all the money, over $200,000 a year. And you guard making $30,000 and $35,000. Plenty of you on the floor. On the floor, I call it. That's where you are. So we got to understand that. You got a degree. Sometimes the warden might have one degree. You might have 2 degrees. You can't get no point in lieutenant. That's the way it is. Education has its bias, too. Everything's biased against you because they're not going to redistribute the wealth. They done took it all through slavery. They took all the wealth during that particular time. And our schools don't teach enough about this. I spoke at schools about 3 years ago. I spoke at about 25, 30 schools. They called me in to speak to the students. They don't want me back anymore because I told the truth. I told the truth. None of them has called me back. School's integrated now, so you know whatever. Some of my teachers, most of my teachers are dead. They call me to teach their students. They come, you know, to do a some, you know, some type of auditorium type teach to them. I call it a gather information speech. And they love me because I told them the truth. This is the deal. Look at it. They study statistics and see what's going on. You got to study numbers. If you don't know numbers, everything is just rhetoric. Everything else is just plain old rhetoric. Study the numbers and go to see visually what's going on. I gave them a little analogy. I told the kids at a couple of universities here when I spoke to them about 6 years ago. Same thing. Go knock on the doors at the mall and see who owns the store. Some you have no stores at. Atlanta has more black business in the mall than all the other states put together. Other 49. That's amazing to me. One city. Do that resonate with anybody? That should be a resonation right there. That you know something's wrong. 71 car dealerships in the whole country. 71. There's over 5,000. And we got 71. That should resonate with you. But it don't. That don't resonate. We need to go back into the past, how we got where we are today, what it looked like.
Speaking of resonate, I'd like to address this issue to the state of Pennsylvania to June 1st and then Macau. The summer is out. The summer is here. The children are out. What's the best we can expect for the children who are out of school right now in Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, June? What do you think that situation will look like this year versus from past years? What can we expect from our kids as a mother?
As a mother? That's a loaded question because in terms of the kids who just got out this week, their programs, they have free programs that if the parents take the time, they can find these programs in YWCA where it's not that expensive to put young kids from high school and all the way down into these programs where they can learn something and do something. I do know this is the first time that I can remember in the last 5 years that Philadelphia has actually opened up recreation centers, particularly the pools. Well, they're hoping that a lot of them will spend a lot of time. Maybe they can learn to swim. They have time. They will have time to do that because they are actually open. We have a lot of cultural programs, free ones that happen. Michael mentioned the waterfront, Penn's Landing, where they can go down there and participate in different festivals where they can still learn if they're under the guise or the, you know, with community leaders or their parents or something like that. So there are alternatives for the kids if the parents, again, step out there, find those free programs, and just not allow their kids to just stand on the street corners like they used to do like 5-10 years ago in Philadelphia.
Okay, can you give me your take on it?
Okay, it's an old story, and this is something that we can work on ourselves. The pools are open, and there are things available, but it's going to really come down to the parents' involvement and that they see how important it is that their children are not left to their own devices throughout the summer. There are opportunities to study. There's a free library, and they're open. We managed to get that here in Philadelphia. There are other programs going on in the city, and what people are doing here now, since there's not as much government support for summertime programs, is that we are beginning to institute our own. This summer we'll be working with various community groups to set up play groups, study groups, and athletic groups, whether it's softball, boxing, or whatever other sports. And it's just a matter of setting things up to do it for ourselves while the government seems to be kind of lacking the financial, some of these things.
Okay. We only have a few minutes left for our listening audience and those who will be periodically trying to engage Mr. Page's history, Emmanuel. Can give our audience, our listening audience, some kind of idea of what we can expect from Mr. Page's history this coming and upcoming fall? What are some of the goals and objectives of Mr. Page's history?
One of the goals that the chapter here in Carolina is going to try to do, AAU basketball get involved in it, but what they got to do, they have to go by the library and get a book. I'm requesting that. Everybody's eyes open up when I say that. Their neck got a little crook in the neck from the sponsors. And my thing is, let's study something. Before we let's study what basketball is all about. From Dr. Naismith, who invented basketball, let's do a report on him. See, let's make them open their minds up. Right then, their minds are closed. And what the Pennsylvania chapter said 3 minutes ago is that I look at that, but the critical thinking part of that, the kids got to get there. Most parents are working two jobs, and they have to get to where they're going. Well, that's going to be a problem. Which takes money again. That's where kids meet, get peer pressure. So again, we have to look at the economics of what's going on. But violence. Some kids, some people won't take their kids to play because of violence. That's a big thing. That's a huge thing. We have to look at that. Gangs, they get the kids from these particular areas. They join gangs. So all this stuff here, you got to put inside this box. And you got to filter this box out first of the negative things might be coming at them. So those are the kind of things I'm putting to the AU basketball. I guess 16 players and 3 coaches, and they was amazing. They clapped their hands when I said what I'm saying now, basically. They have to get there. So we have to get a ride, because most, again, they're working two jobs. And most of them work second shift. What kids going to be playing? You work at, I did a thing on Walmart, the landscape of Walmart. 85% of African Americans work at Walmart, work the second and third shift. Don't work the first shift. 85% of whites work the first shift. 85% of work that 3 to 12 and that midnight putting stock in the shelves. So I went to look at that, find out what was going on. I went to 13 Walmarts and found the same thing. 13. 85 African Americans work the second and third shift. Well, where your kids are? Are they latchkey? Where are they? That's why they get in trouble, because mom and dad not home. So we got to look at this whole thing in this box and look at the negatives and look at the positives and look at both. Kid drowned the other day, 5 years old in the pool. Wow. Unattended, yeah, lifeguards are there. You just can't throw your kid in the pool and expect him to do what he did. So you got to look at all the things that happened, these some of the negative things that happened.
And on that note, Emmanuel, unfortunately we ran out of time. We're going to have to stop you. And we'd like to thank our listening audience today for tuning in and allowing us to come to home as we present another aspect, episode of Missing Page of History. We'd like to thank all our supporters, and we'd like to just share with our listening audience that past raffle winner drawing winners were first place George Robinson, second place Terry Spencer, and third place Cheryl Hope. George Robinson was from Richmond, Virginia. Terry Spencer was out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Sherry Hook was out of North Carolina. We'd like to thank them and congratulate them for their participation on our second quarterly raffle drawing. And our next quarterly raffle drawing, which will be our third quarterly raffle drawing, will be on August the 16th. For more information, please make sure you call Mr. Page of History at 804-321.